Welcome to the St. Brigid's podcast. St. Brigid's is a congregation of Christ Church Cathedral, Vancouver, a community where questions are honored, faith is nurtured, and discipleship pursued. Learn more at thecathedral.ca/worship.
Holy One, for all that has been, yes. For all that will be, yes. Please be seated. Well, it's very nice to be back. For those of you who are regular St. Beers, it's been a very long time. I was thinking actually just now that it would have been February of 2020 that I last preached here. I did preach online once or twice with the community, but this is the first time in a very long time. So it's very nice to be back as I mumble away here. So here we are. It's the weekend of Remembrance Day. And of course, the readings for this Sunday are all about apocalypse. It's kind of apropos. You see, remembrance is a very special word here. It's not talking about simply remembering. It's about bringing the past into the present in the hope that by symbolically reenacting the past moment, we might learn and relearn again together. It's why at Remembrance Day, the cannons fire. Why we have silence. It's why the bugle plays. It's why the old men and women weep and salute. We bring back into our lives the horror that is war by remembering. And we've returned to reenact a remembrance each Sunday here at St. Bede's. The Eucharist we share is a remembrance of the Last Supper. We break bread. We celebrate gratitude for the gifts of community, the gifts of grace in our lives. We bring back into our lives the love of God manifest in the Christ. But how are these two, the remembrance of war and the remembrance of God's love, related? Well, I think that it actually has to do with you and me. It has not to do, it has to do not with war and terror, although those certainly are present in our time and place, but it has to do with how you and I behave, how we choose to move through our lives. As people of faith, as children of God, we are called to lives of peace. And in doing so, working towards a time of God's will, peace and shalom, a time when there will be no war. And we can be distracted. We can even give up hope as we watch on the evening news, as war and violence destroy lives still. Truth be told, there is a reading of this evening's gospel that would suggest that with the war, earthquakes, and famine figuring so prominently in the news, we might wonder aloud, is the end nigh? What can I do? How can I stop the Taliban, the Hezbollah, the Israeli Defense Force, the U.S. military, just to name a few? How can I work towards reconciliation with between settler and indigenous people here in this part of the world? How could I have an impact on the global environmental catastrophe? Well, obviously, I can vote. I can buy fair trade. I can learn with and from indigenous elders. I can stand in peaceful resistance against corporate interests destroying forests. All of these things are good. And yet, they are at best disingenuous if I'm not working for peace in my own life, in my own heart, in my own home, in my own workplace. So what I'd like to invite us into this evening is an exploration of how apocalypse described in tonight's gospel pushes us as individuals. How does it invite us into lives of shalom so that one day God's will on earth as in heaven? So, as some of you will know, I'm a bit of a word nerd. The Greek word from which we get apocalypse actually meant unveiling. So what's being unveiled here? What's being unveiled here? And to be blunt, I don't think it's an unveiling of a zombie apocalypse or pandemics or even God's wrath. I think a mirror is being unveiled, a mirror of our own human against human violence. Our gospel is more about us than it is about a wrathful God. Where Jesus talks about people following others who say they are speaking in God's name, he's calling out how we have set up ourselves and for ourselves the idea that some violence is okay. Some violence is sanctioned and even holy. Other violence is unsanctioned and profane. We use the sanctioned violence against the unsanctioned violence. The sanctioned violence is the violence we use against them, whoever them is. Or some of us believe it's our bound duty to use violence, direct action, euphemistically, against the oppressors, whoever they might be. We sanction our own violent acts because, well, the ends justify the means. And on an individual level, we think we're correct or within our rights to speak harshly, to bully, or to push back against people who have offended us, who've done some kind of injury to us. Our actions, our violence is sanctioned because, well, we're right. And here, my friends, is one of the big challenges of Jesus' teachings. Violence begets violence. Period. Sanctioned violence begets more unsanctioned violence. Period. Unsanctioned violence begets more sanctioned violence. Period. Human violence in the cycle of sanctioned and unsanctioned violence is what is being unveiled in this apocalyptic text. The end is not about divine retribution or punishment. That makes no logical sense from a God that forgives God's enemies, even as God hangs from a cross. The end comes about because humans keep violently destroying forests and oceans and land. The end comes about because nation states violently crush people with whom they disagree, internally and externally. The end comes about because anyone who disagrees with me must be a fool or worse, subhuman. And the beginning of the end starts with you and I and the hurt we cause each other. When we say and do things that are reactions to hurts, and so we snap. We snap back. We get into fights with each other in our families, at work, and in our communities. And I believe that Christianity is against violence in any form. Martin Luther King wrote, quote, The ultimate weakness of violence is that it is a descending spiral begetting the very thing it seeks to destroy. Violence merely increases hate. Returning violence for violence multiplies violence, adding deeper darkness to a night already devoid of stars. Darkness cannot drive out darkness. Only light can do that. Hate cannot drive out hate. Only love can do that. And I don't know about you, but I struggle mightily with this challenge that only love can drive out hate. When I'm angry, when I'm hurt, I lash out. I'm sarcastic. I talk about the other person and not very often talk to them. It feels good to do so, quite frankly. It gives me a sense of power or even a strange sense of justice that they somehow deserved it. And I'm curious, is this sounding familiar to you? So what are we to do? How might we respond to people and actions that hurt us without hurting them back? How might we bring light into the darkness of human hurt and violence in our everyday lives? How might we take the remembrance of the Eucharist, the love, the community, into our own lives, into our friendships at home, on the bus, in the workplace? And so I'm going to offer four practices, each one of them possible but difficult. And you may already have some practices for yourself. Practice them. They require attention and time. And as you practice over time, know that you're loved. God's grace is present even in the midst of mistakes and learning. In fact, it may be most present then. And so the overarching practice is responding, not reacting. My default reaction may well be to hurt you if you hurt me, especially if I'm tired or I'm hungry or I'm distressed. My response comes from a deeper place, a place of discernment and reflection. In responding, we may find ourselves on a different path than the hamster wheel of pain and violence. So here's the four practices that may help you choose response rather than reaction. First, and I'm very aware that you're here, Adele, the first is centering prayer. This is a bit of a lost art in Western Christianity. We too often pray to God for about what we want. Please, please, God, let her like me as much as I like her. That kind of thing. Or intercessory prayer. Please, God, help so-and-so with X. Great. Both of these, especially the second one, are really important. They're very good. And a third kind of prayer is centering prayer. As you're able, you find a comfortable place to be, ideally with both feet grounded somehow, and you find a word or a phrase that you want to focus on. Start with 3 minutes. Just start with 3 minutes. Silence focused on that word or phrase. Over time, go to 5 minutes, then 7 minutes. And what you're doing is you're actually calming your brain. And with practice and over time, you'll find that you're able to respond to actions rather than to react to them more often and more effectively. The second practice is one that we do all the time quite naturally, but unconsciously. It's called breathing. And there's a number of different methodologies, but one I like is breathing in through the nose for a count of four and out through the mouth for a count of five. And then you breathe in for five and out for six, and then in for six and out for seven. So let's try it. Let's just, as you're able, get yourself grounded, however you want to sit and be grounded. And what we're going to do is we're going to breathe in for four and out for five, and then breathe in for five and out for six. So we'll start it off. Breathe in for four and out for five. In for five and out for six. In for six and out for seven. What this does for us is that it lets the body and the mind know that all is well. If you are breathing like that, you're not having to run away. You're not angry. You're letting your body and your brain inform themselves that all is well. Practice this and soon you'll be able to respond to what is ever in the here and now. The third practice is what I call the four questions. And I'm borrowing liberally here from the Jesuit Daily Examen. It's just four questions, but done with a journal in the evening, over time, you get a different perspective on how you navigate the world. And the questions are first, what went well today? What went well today? Just note for yourself those moments where there was even just a glimmer of good in the day. Secondly, where did I mess up? Don't dwell here. You don't need to recall the whole screenplay about it, but in a couple of words, where was I not at my best today? The third question needs always to follow the second question. How will I make amends? If you can make amends tomorrow for what happened today, great, but sometimes you're not able to. So it may be that you pay something forward. You make a difference for someone else. The final question, for whom or what am I grateful? There will always be something or someone that inspires your thanks. Even in the most difficult days, who or what are you grateful for? And over time, you'll find that the went well list actually grows. The mess up list may start to shrink a little as you notice patterns, and the amend list keeps balance on the mess up list. The gratitude list will slowly grow as well. And out of this practice, you find that violent language and thinking is now less useful. And here's the fourth and final practice. It's something that I could do a lot more of. It's called silence. The late Ojibwe writer Richard Wagamese wrote, quote, "Sometimes people just need to talk. They need to be heard. They need the validation of my time, my silence, my unspoken compassion. They don't need advice. They don't need sympathy or counseling. They need to hear the sound of their own voices speaking their own truths, articulating their own feelings as those may be at a particular moment. They need simply a nod of the head, a pat on the shoulder, or a hug. I'm learning that sometimes silence is golden." End quote. Pray, breathe, reflect, and be silent. If each of us did more of these four things, what would we unveil? Who or what could we become? What war might be stopped before it begins? As we prepare for the remembrance of the Eucharist, we'll break bread. We'll celebrate gratitude for the gifts of community, the gifts of grace in our lives. And we can bring back into our lives a glimpse of a world of shalom and love. And with God's grace, the end to war.